What's up, everybody? Welcome to this latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, reminding you that every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I come on the airwaves of SiriusXM POTUS Radio Channel 124. Looking forward to talking to y'all Wednesday night. Looking forward to that show being heard and seen everywhere. For the moment in time, while this was on my mind, fresh off another beautiful weekend for myself, there were moments during this weekend that were not so beautiful. And one of those things that stood out was the memorial service, the homegoing of Reverend Jesse Jackson. And this was being held in Chicago and what have you. And a lot of people had their feelings about what was transpiring over the last few days, the dignitaries that showed up, former presidents who showed up to speak, former presidential candidates who showed up to speak, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot to get into. But before I do that, let me get right to it before I express my disgust. My utter disgust. Let me first play for you what Jesse Jackson Jr. had asked before the memorial services took place. Please look at this.
Do not bring your politics out of respect to Reverend Jesse Jackson and the life that he lived to these homegoing services.
Right.
Come respectful and come to say thank you. But these homegoing services are welcome to all. Democrat, Republican, liberal, and conservative, right wing, left wing, because his life is broad enough to cover the full spectrum of what it means to be an American.
We
only ask people to come and be respectful in the context of the extraordinary life that he lived.
That was Jesse Jackson Jr., the son of the Reverend Jesse Jackson, speaking before the memorial service took place. Don't bring your politics here. We're celebrating the life of my father. We're putting him to rest. And this is how we want his home going to be. Nevertheless, there were an abundance of people who didn't listen to that. Some of them were former presidents. Some of them were somebody who came out short in the presidential election. And that is where we are going to go today. Because you know what? When you can't abide by the wishes of the families, of the family, of somebody as renowned as Reverend Jesse Jackson, specifically asking you to leave your politics at home, knowing their father and knowing what he would have wanted, you would think that people could oblige with a simple, direct wish such as that. Nevertheless, here's what we saw. Play this, please.
Each day we wake up to some new assault on our democratic institutions. Another setback to the idea of the rule of law. An offense to common decency. Every day you wake up to things you just didn't think were possible. Each day we're told by those in high office to fear each other and to turn on each other, and that some Americans count more than others, and that some don't even count at all. Everywhere we see greed and bigotry being celebrated, and bullying and mockery masquerading as strength. We see science and expertise denigrated, while ignorance and dishonesty and cruelty and corruption are reaping untold rewards every single day. We see that.
So let me just say, I predicted a lot about what's happening right now. I'm not into saying I told you so, but we did see it coming.
I'm glad she's smiling, because I'm not. As it pertains to President Obama and his choice words for the president administration in the White House, I'm not here to disagree with him. I think every word that he said is practically correct. I don't think that it's specific and directed solely to this administration or the GOP without it being able to be said about the Democrats and what the progressive, the extreme progressive left was willing to do with people that didn't vibe with their vision of what America should be over the last several years. One could easily make an argument against them for that, but I'm not even here to get into all of that. What I'm trying to say is that those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, figuratively speaking. But if you're going to do that, let it be courtesy of Barack Obama, who was right on point with what he said. I don't think he should have said it on that particular day in that specific locale because the family of Reverend Jesse Jackson asked for that not to happen. But what he said wasn't false. Because we all know what I've said and how I feel about the manner in which this White House is elected to conduct this business. It's downright trifling half the time, juvenile, soulless at times. But it's not like we haven't been able to say that about the progressive left. And I say the progressive left because I'm talking about the extreme leftists that wanted people to get fired if you mispronounced the wrong pronoun. Don't get me started with that. But the Kamala Harris thing, I am going to tell y'all right now, I'm on the verge one of these days real soon of blowing a gasket. If I see that lady, figuratively speaking, in our face one more time talking about she told us so, it's pissing me off. Because it's implying that we didn't support her. Nearly 75 million people voted for her. You had a 107-day campaign. 75 million people almost showed up to vote for you. You had $1.5 billion to spend. We supported you. Why are you sitting at a memorial service in a church with number black people around you talking to us about you told us so, like we didn't support you? I voted for her. Most black folks voted for her. What are you talking about? We supported you when you didn't necessarily earn our support. You didn't go through a primary. You didn't scallivant around the country earning our vote, knocking door to door. You didn't do that. You bypassed the primary. You were handed the presidential nomination for the Democratic Party once Biden stepped down. You had some people in the Democratic Party laughing about the fact that, you know what? We're glad that Biden stepped down when he did, because had he stepped away earlier, there would have been a primary. She wouldn't have been a Democratic nominee for the presidency. And after that, you know what? She wouldn't have had that opportunity. It wasn't us that went on The View. And when you were asked, is there anything different that you would do compared to what Biden did? I really can't think of anything. We didn't do that. You did. And we voted for you anyway. We told you to be aggressive, to stop being so damn loyal to Joe Biden, to making sure that you assuaged his concerns, and as a result, you were conducting yourself in a fashion that was non-offensive to him, more so than prioritizing getting as many votes as you possibly could to win the presidency, and you could thank him and you could take care of him later. We were telling you that. We were telling you to be more aggressive. We were telling you to be more assertive. We were telling you to remind people of your record. You were an attorney general. You were a senator. You were the reigning vice president of the United States. You had the credential. What were you being passive for? You didn't want to be disloyal. You didn't want to come across as being disloyal. But we found out in your book, after you lost the election, you didn't tell us all of that beforehand. You wasn't aggressive beforehand. You didn't push the envelope beforehand. Black folks still supported you. Why you keep standing in our face talking about you told us so? Like somehow, some way, we went against you and we didn't believe you and we didn't support you. Yes, we did. Yes, we did. In some cases, against our better judgment. We still supported you. I say all of that because I'm sick and tired of us walking around passive and absorbing and stomaching this stuff that is flat out untrue. Black folks voted for Kamala Harris. Supported Kamala Harris. You didn't have to say you told us so. We knew, we still know. And we supported you. You yourself had to admit that you didn't campaign accurately or the right way. You keep leaning on 107 days that you had. You keep leaning on the fact that you were at a disadvantage. You still had $1.5 billion. You still beat Trump on a debate stage when you went up against him. You yourself said that you had more voters come out to vote for the Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States of America than anyone in history. Why do you keep saying you told us so? Very annoying. It's not fair to us who supported you. It's not. And then we find out how candid and in your face and unapologetic you could be when it's time to sell your book, but not when you're running for the presidency. Come on now. We've been supporting you. We've been spewing your credentials. When they tried to minimize you, your intellect, your accomplishments, or anything in between, we jumped up and defended you. Why are you telling us I told you so? Like we did you wrong. We did not. What you gonna tell Jesse Jackson Jr.? He asked y'all not to engage in the politics, right? Y'all think I'm just saying that? Listen to Jesse Jackson Jr. speak after the former president, along with former President Joe Biden, along with former Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States, Kamala Harris. After they spoke, listen to Jesse Jackson Jr. speak about them.
Yesterday, I listened for several hours of three United States presidents who do not know Jesse Jackson. He maintained a tense relationship with the political order, not because the presidents were white or black, but the demands of our message, the demands of speaking for the least of these, those who were disinherited, the damned, the dispossessed, the disrespected, demanded not Democratic or Republican solutions, but demanded a consistent, prophetic voice that at no point in time ever sold us out as a people. And it speaks volumes about who the Reverend Jesse Jackson was.
They could have easily leaned on that message from Jesse Jackson Jr. to make their points. Instead of getting political and resembling at least to, in a non-profane way, similar to James Carville, who proudly suffers from Trump derangement syndrome, as he says he has it and he hopes to get even more infected by it. You just wonder why people had the inability to avoid doing that at Reverend Jesse Jackson's memorial service. I know it's hard, times that we're living in. Being black, seeing an administration that no matter what they do, whether it be good, bad, or indifferent, seems to not be thinking about our community at all. Hell, I don't blame anybody. They came out and say, that they remember our ancestors and the things that they had to endure. And they have this belief in their heart that based on what they're seeing and the soulless approach that this administration and so many people who cater to it, that there's this innate belief that there's an aspiration to return to those times. I don't blame them feeling that way one bit. Find myself feeling that way too sometimes. Most times. But it doesn't mean that you ignore the wishes of a family mourning the loss of their father, their husband, along with various other loved ones. It doesn't mean that you put your own individual agenda at the forefront at the expense of a family's public wishes. An inability to do so certainly doesn't make you indecent or anything like that. What it does mean, however, is that your thought process is so warped at that particular moment in time that you just couldn't help yourself. And if you just couldn't help yourself, maybe, just maybe, that's the reason he's back in the White House to begin with. Because you couldn't help yourself from restraining yourself emotionally, that played yourself. And you played yourself right into his hands, doing the kind of things that he wanted you to do, that he knew would ultimately work against you and would work for him to get him returned to the White House. I only bring this up because there's a midterm election coming. I only bring this up because we're only 2 years away from a presidential election. Time is flying by quickly. What you gonna do? Are you gonna learn to compose and restrain yourself? Or are you just gonna ignore all forms and request for decorum? And just say what you want to say and do what you want to do and not think about the repercussions. Something to think about. Something to think about. It's time for me to move on to Jasmine Crockett. Because she lost the recent election for the Senate seat in the state of Texas. I think their black population is approximately 33%, somewhere around there if I remember correctly. And Jasmine Crockett didn't get enough votes. There were reports about her style. There were reports about things that she said that offended migrants and stuff like that. Ultimately, what it came down to is that James Tallarico had 52.4% of the vote. She won by 46. She had 46.2%. We can get into the numbers in just a second, but what's really, really important to point out is that he won. He got white voters. He got a lot of the Hispanic voters. You have 6.5 million people in the state of Texas from the Hispanic community registered to vote, and he appeared to have appealed to more of them than she did. Policies were relatively similar. Styles were drastically different. He was considered somebody that was willing to go across the aisle a little bit more, that was willing to engage in negotiation and compromise, that focused his attention on Ken Paxton, the attorney general from the state of Texas, that's believed to be the individual who's going to win the GOP nomination for the Senate seat of Texas. And because that's the reality, that's what he targeted, that turned out to be a far more effective strategy than Jasmine Crockett simply talking about how she's well-known and she is going to bring, just bring hell to the present administration and go after Trump at every turn. Apparently, that's not a strategy that worked with most Texans, so she lost. Think of it what you will, but there's some interesting notes to bring up when it comes to Jasmine Crockett and her losing this election for the Senate seat in Texas. And you don't have to get it from me. I don't know. I just go to those who do. And my next guest is one of those individuals. He is a progressive civil rights advocate, entrepreneur, and founder of Civics for the People, based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He's known for his social media posts that educate his 500,000 followers on how the government affects our lives. He's got all the numbers, not just the numbers in the state of Texas, but from those counties that she was in pursuit of, some of which she lost, some of which she won. He's got it all. So you want to really, really know what happened with Jasmine Crockett and why she lost this election? You're about to find out right now. Please welcome to the show for the first time, the one and only Gary Chambers Jr. What's going on, Gary? How you doing, big time? What's going on?
I'm well, brother. It's a beautiful day in South Louisiana.
I got you. First of all, I appreciate time out of your busy schedule, man. Thank you for taking time. I saw your social media post, and I wanted to thank you for educating so many people about what transpired with Jasmine Crockett against James Tallarico for the Texas Senate seat. Remind my audience what you said and educate us as briefly as you possibly can about why, indeed, she lost this race.
So this is a matter of when you look at the numbers of who turned out their base. James Tallarico beat Congressman Crockett by 144,000 votes. When you look at that, he got the primary lead that he pulled was in Travis County. He got 112,000 vote lead in Travis County. And when you compare that where Congresswoman Crockett, her base is in Dallas, there was a 50,000 vote lead. What does that mean in the interim? What that means in the long run is James Tallarico had a strategy of turning out working class white voters and Hispanic voters in specific counties. He executed that strategy to a degree where he had 144,000 vote victory, but that biggest gap came from Travis County, Hays County, and Williamson County, which all surround the Austin area.
So with that being said, basically he maximized the white vote. Would you say, I don't want to use the word ignore, but he didn't prioritize seeking the black vote because he knew that's something he wasn't going to win? Would you say it's a fair assumption that that's a way he went about winning this race?
So I would tell you, Chuck Rocha, who works for Tallarico, worked for me in 2022. Chuck is a great strategist, and he's also from East Texas. And Chuck went into this, I believe, helping them come up with a framework that told them, we are not going to get a great pull away from Congresswoman Crockett, who was polling at 80%+ with black voters. And then he executed a strategy surrounding Travis, Hays, Williamson County. He also won El Paso and some of the other majority Hispanic communities as well. And the question for Democrats always in Texas, though, is, can you turn out the black vote of Texas to help you? Because the base of the Democratic Party is black voters. And we have to remember that when we are not moving those voters out, we are going to end up in a troublesome situation in November. I don't think that this is a matter of whether or not Congresswoman Crockett could not defeat Representative Tallarico, because if you take Williamson, Hays, and Travis County out, she beats him by 58,000 votes. However, because her margins were not large enough in Dallas County, in Harris County, in Jefferson County is where Beaumont is. When you have a community where you have about 40 or 50,000 black people and she receives 15,000 votes in that community, we left a lot of meat on the bone in Jefferson County. And so that is why Tallarico was able to overcome in this situation. It was the execution of the strategies, not that either one of the strategies were better than the other, because the margin was not large enough to say that his strategy was so much better than hers.
Well, Gary, isn't that your way of saying, though, that the black folks didn't turn out to vote for her? Like, she got the vast majority of black voters who actually voted, but that wasn't a big enough turnout, right? Isn't that what you're saying?
But that is the problem in Texas in every election. When Beto O'Rourke lost in the Senate race that he had, he lost by 40,000 votes, and there were 900,000 registered black voters in Texas that hadn't shown up. You have to invest in the black vote to turn out the black vote. Congresswoman Crockett had $6 million. Tallarico had $20 million. That's a part of coming into the apparatus late, jumping into the race at the point that she did, gave her a shorter runway to raise that money. Tallarico had been running for a year. He executed and had some pivotal moments, the Colbert moment. I'm sure he raised a ton of money off being able to capitalize off of that moment.
He raised $2.5 million from the Colbert appearance.
So all of that to me is about execution of strategy. If I had a question, my question would be, who was in charge of executing the strategy that Congresswoman Crockett had? Because if Tallarico is going to be successful, he's going to have to figure out, how do you close that gap where Texas ends up with 40,000 or 100,000 votes short, but you got 900,000 registered Black voters. I am not of the belief that you're going to get that vote from Hispanic voters who tend to vote 30 or 40% for Democrats in some elections, or white voters who vote 30 or 40% for Democrats in some elections, when you have a margin where Black people show you, Black men and Black women, Black men, over 80% of Black men vote for Democrats, over 90% of Black women. And so if there are almost a million Black voters, the question to the Democratic Party for me is always, why are you not investing in that Black vote? The only place, Stephen A., that Democrats have flipped Senate seats is Georgia. Georgia is the third blackest state in America. They have been where there was a investment in Black voters. You picked up John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, right? And so we have to be honest about where that investment was made. There was a return on that investment. That investment is not being made in Texas. It's not being made in Louisiana or Mississippi.
Well, when you say that the investment wasn't made in the Black community in terms of conjuring or coaxing the Black vote, who do you hold accountable for that? Is it simply about money, dollars, $6 million compared to $20 million? Is it about Black voters in that respective state, a state like Texas, just being lazy? What is the issue? Why is it, when we're talking about a lack of turnout, what are we to point the finger at?
I think that's a host of things. I think voter apathy is a real thing. I think that people are frustrated with the system in Black communities. You go and vote and you don't necessarily see a return on that investment. The potholes in your neighborhood may remain. The schools in your community may still be failing. Things that you have made a great issue with people about have not been prioritized. The reason I think Congresswoman Crockett got the level of support from Black people that she did is because she is speaking to those issues. I think the higher the priority of Black people's issues, the higher the turnout in Black communities will be. I think also it is a numbers game. If you got $20 million versus $6 million, that makes a difference. When I ran against John Kennedy in 2022, he had $40 million to my $1.5 million. No matter how much I tried, no matter how many great ads I created, $40 million and the ability to contact voters, run your ads, fund your door-knocking campaign. You got to also own that James Tallarico had 30,000 people knocking doors in Texas, which would turn out those people in a larger gap. The question for me is, what was the door-knocking strategy in Congresswoman Crockett's campaign? How does she mobilize the people that were in her base, and did she have enough resources to be able to pour into Harris County? And you got to take into effect, Harris County is a massive county. We're not talking about a community of a couple hundred thousand people. We're talking about a community of 3-4 million people, and that is you have to have a lot of money to be able to turn out vote in those communities.
Gary Chambers, what level of culpability, if any, do you throw on the shoulders of Jasmine Crockett? Is there anything specific that you point to directly as it relates to her that she could have or should have done differently or better?
My largest question is, who was the campaign manager? Who were the people in charge of executing the strategy? I believe she had the right strategy. The question is, who was in charge of executing that strategy? Because if you take out Travis County, Hayes County, and Williamson County, she wins by over 50,000 votes. And so that just means that the execution in the largest counties in Texas was better on the Tallarico side than it was on the Crockett side. And I do not ignore the money component, because in order to put volunteers on the ground, give them materials, allow them to knock doors, it costs money for every T-shirt, every push card, and every bit of those that work that's there. When you have less resources, one of the things that some strategists try to get you to do is spend money on TV, radio, and things of that nature. When you have less money, my belief is you invest almost as much as you can of it on the ground, because that's where you can ensure, where you can see where your return on your investment is.
Are you aligned with her assertions that people were turned away at the last minute in a couple of counties, specifically Dallas County, that prevented her from winning this race, that had a detrimental effect on the outcome?
I think what happened in Dallas County was an atrocity. I think that what conservatives were doing was a direct attempt, because you got to remember, Ken Paxton is also on the ballot. So he doesn't want more people in Dallas County voting. I think some people are looking at this and saying Ken Paxton was targeting her. I think Ken Paxton was trying to make sure that in a community that may be a little more moderate towards, I can't think of the other guy's name, Cornyn.
John Cornyn.
That people may be more inclined to vote for Cornyn. And Paxton wanted to cut off the ability for Cornyn to be able to pick up votes as well in Dallas County. Did that hurt Congresswoman Crockett? Absolutely. That still does not change that Jefferson County and Harris County had hundreds of thousands of black people. There's a million plus black people that live in Harris County. Over 500,000 of them are registered to vote. 180,000 people showed up in Harris County to vote for Congresswoman Crockett. That meant that over 300,000 black people minimum were left eligible to vote at that time. My question is, who knocked their door and encouraged them to get out and vote in this primary?
Anything you make of the assertions that she possibly lost this election because she alienated some people within the Hispanic community because of her words leading up to the election, or, you know, stuff that they have for her on tape talking about black folks were done picking cotton and, you know, having the slave mentality, some folks in the Hispanic community when it comes to migrants, et cetera, et cetera. People have written about how that may have had a detrimental effect on the outcome that she received. Your thoughts about that?
I think that original polling before any of those comments said that she was going to get about 30% of the Hispanic vote. She pulled about 30% of the Hispanic vote. Now, did that maybe hinder some people who were on the fence from coming along with her? Possibly. But I think that those folks had already decided that. And this is where the logic comes from, honestly. There is a logic in the South, especially, that white is right, that the way to win these elections is you got to get more white voters to join you. So if that is your belief that assimilating is the pathway, James Tallarico was a more attractive candidate, no matter what Congresswoman Crockett had done. I believe that there are some hard conversations that need to happen between the Hispanic community and the African-American community. I think Congresswoman Crockett was alluding to that. People want us to be perfect. You can't be perfect. Even some of the comments that you've made, you've been criticized sometimes for some of the things you've said. Absolutely. We don't get it right in our approach in saying it. We're just trying to address real issues that we see. And I think that Congresswoman Crockett had a strategy of turning out based on the polling she had saw. If you listen to her early commentary when she came in, she jumped in based on what the polling was telling her was possible for her to be able to do. That polling still said Hispanics were around 30% turnout. The reason is the base of the Democratic Party is not Hispanic, it's not white, it's black people. And so if you know that you can get this cushion of the black vote, it's really the margins. And how do you grow your margins? I think that she needed to run her margins up with black voters so that she could advance to the end game. And that is where Tallarico, in my opinion, if there was a thing he did better, he went straight after those white voters. He went straight after those Hispanic voters. He did not attempt to go after the black vote because getting the primary is about turning out your tribe. He understands, I've represented these people in this area for the majority of the time that I've been in office. This is where I have the most name ID. She's got bigger name ID. And she did beat him in almost all of the East Texas counties. And in some of those counties, she beat him 70, 80%. She got 70, 80% of the vote in those counties. It's really just a matter of, did you get enough money, time, and resources to put those people out? That's the real game. Those 30% of Hispanic voters was what she was going to get from day one.
Gary Chambers Jr. right here with Stephen A., straight shooter with yours truly. Gary, you know, put it on Front Street, you know, listen, I've been criticized about things that I've said about Jasmine Crockett, and my whole point is I didn't want her to lose. I've always wanted her to win, and I recognize what potential she has as a representative out of Texas practice, the license to practice law in Texas, Arkansas, and federally, and I was mentioning months ago when the whole brouhaha took place that, look, you talk about the United States Senate seat. You ain't talking about 766,000 constituents. You talk about 31 million, all right, if you become one or two U.S. senators. But in order to win Texas, and I say Texas the way I say Texas for a reason, you know, so that's the South, that's the Deep South right there. I said, you're going to have to come across a little bit differently if you want to win. That was my belief system. You can call that assimilation or whatever. I'm just thinking you're trying to win an election. Those are voters. You got to go get them. Was I wrong in my thinking, in my assertions and thinking that?
I think so. I think so. And I'm going to give you a perspective from my election in 2022. When I ran against John Kennedy with Luke Mixon, Luke Mixon was a fighter pilot, Top Gun pilot in the military, went to West Point, great man. And he ran for office, a white Democrat. He was endorsed by our Democratic governor at the time. He raised $3 million, which I only raised $1.4 million. Folks told me that Luke Mixon was going to beat me in the race when we were in that situation. Luke asked me one day, Gary, why are you so nice to me? I said, because you can't beat me. Louisiana is 34% black, Stephen. What we have done as a strategy is tell black people that you got to go get that white vote in order to win, when the truth is you're leaving hundreds of thousands of black voters at home because you're not engaging them or prioritizing them. So if you have, it's really always numbers. Louisiana is 34% black, which means that I only need 15 to 20% of white voters to join me in order to win this election. When I ran, I got 40% of white Democrats. Luke Mixon got 26% of black Democrats. What I'm saying in that is, I was talking about black issues. I never had an event where white people didn't show up. I have learned that the white voters that we are looking for, they are chasing us down. They need us to go get our base out. And what we have failed at as black Democrats is going to prioritize the needs of black people in tangible ways so that we can stimulate and motivate them to go vote. We can't just show up at events. We got to get in the community. We got to let some of our aunties and uncles cuss us out because they're not satisfied with the product of what they're getting in their neighborhood. Right. And then after they tell you what they feel about you, that same black person is going to show up for you because they want to be able to hold you accountable. And the only way that black people have been able to hold the Democratic establishment accountable is not to show up.
So you're saying to me that Louisiana is 34% in terms of the black vote that you was after, it's about 34% black. Well, what was the number in Texas?
Texas percentage is about, I think, 14 or 15% black. Okay. But Texas is over 50% minority, right? And so what I believe the strategy for black Democrats in Texas has to be, you got to get every black voter in Texas engaged, energized, and geared up behind a black candidate. And just like James Tallarico has won his primary, and now he's going to try to get black voters to come over to him. When you win your primary, you then get to bring people over to you. But we are always making our decisions based on what other people are doing, rather than what is in our best interest first. No other group of people does that other than black people.
Okay, so you're saying to me that Jasmine Crockett should have and could have focused more and primarily on the black voter, and that would have been enough for her to win Texas. Whether it was a campaign manager or somebody, they didn't do their job.
She would have won the primary if she focused, if she had went, put all of her energy into black voters and turned those voters. She lost by 144,000. She had a million plus black people on the line. So you escaped a winning strategy. The execution of the strategy left too many black voters on the vine. And the proof is actually watching what James Tallarico was telling everybody. He said, we invested in Hispanic radio. We had bilingual ad. We spent money. He went after a specific group. He never said they went after black voters. Not one time when you watch Chuck's interviews are he saying that he targeted black voters at all, because it wasn't a part of the strategy, because primary is about tribe, and the who has the strongest tribe moves to the other side. If black voters show up at that level, nobody else has a choice but to come along with you if they want to win.
Gary Chambers, man, you know what? I really appreciate this education. Thank you so much for it. Before I let you go, there's an underlying message that I'm sure you want to send. You want disseminated to the black community moving forward with not just that election, but with various elections throughout this country, particularly with the midterms coming up and a presidential election coming up in 2028. What would that message be coming from Gary Chambers?
You know, Stephen A., one, I appreciate you broadening your audience to political conversations, even if it brings you smoke. I don't always agree with you, but I think it's important for us to have conversation with each other, right? Absolutely. I created Civics for the People after I ran for office, because when I went into these communities, what I discovered is many people in our community don't know what a city council member does versus what a state representative does versus what a U.S. senator does. And so they mad at everybody because they don't feel like anybody's delivering for them. This image behind me, Stephen A., is from the Reconstruction Legislature. That's Oscar Dunn in the middle. He's the first black person to become lieutenant governor of a state in America in the 1800s here in Louisiana. Those black men, it was 46 of them that went into the Louisiana legislature and created public education as we know it in the state of Louisiana. Before that, education in Louisiana was taken care of parish by parish. They created a system that was funded by the entire state. When black people are in leadership, we create opportunity for everyone because we've been denied that leadership. But what we need to do now, and specifically speaking to your audience, when you've got athletes who are having conversations where the president is sitting down with everybody but you to talk about your financial state, You should be investing in political races. Right now, Brother Colomb is running in Mississippi against Cindy Hyde Claire. If you play for Mississippi State or Ole Miss right now, and your NIL is in jeopardy, there's a black man on the ballot that you should be talking to and investing some of that NIL money in his campaign so you can turn out the blackest state in America, which is Mississippi, 38% black. When they had a governor's race where it was decided by a close margin, we have new black millionaires coming through the sports and entertainment industry every year, and the government is making decisions about you, and you have a ton of influence. Put your money in this politics the same way as wealthy white men so that we can turn the investment in our community into real tangible results for our people. We have power, especially in the South, Stephen. I believe in a new black South. Louisiana's 34% black. Mississippi's 38% black. Georgia's 33% black. South Carolina's 28% black, and North Carolina is around the same. Each one of those states, if black voters showed up at the value of their vote, they could turn the trajectory the same way our ancestors did fresh off the plantation. And if our ancestors could do that off the plantation, how dare we be half-ass?
Gary, last question. Where does Jasmine Crockett go from here, in your estimation?
You know, I can't speak to how the Congresswoman should proceed. I think that she controls the black vote in Texas in a heavy way right now. That is very clear. When you win counties in your state by 70 and 80% where black people are making the difference there, I think James Tallarico has got to do a heavy job on recruiting her. When you lose an election, you feel a lot of emotions, and it's on the other side who needs you to help them turn it out to go do the work necessary to build that relationship. I think that if she can help turn out that black vote in Texas, I think it'll be transformative for her and for the country. Stacey Abrams is not the governor of Georgia. But you ask anybody if Stacey Abrams is a powerful black woman who means something to people in this country, black, white, brown, and everything, because Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff do not make it to the United States Senate without the organizing power of Stacey Abrams. And so it is unfortunate that we are failing black women in this way, black men as well. There have been 12 black U.S. senators in the history of this country. Okay, so we have been shorted together. I think that we as black people have to figure out together how do we leverage our power together. And I think that Congresswoman Crockett has the ability to help leverage some power.
Progressive civil rights advocate, entrepreneur, and founder of Civics for the People based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the one and only Gary Chambers Jr. Really appreciate the education, man. Know that it's a home here. Anytime you want to come on, you're more than welcome, obviously, to discuss a lot of issues and to educate all of us. I'm willing to listen, brother. I'm no expert. You know what I'm saying? I talk to the people that do know. That's why I had you on, because damn it, I didn't know. You knew. That's why I invited you on. I appreciate the education, and feel free to correct me anytime you want to. It doesn't offend me at all. Just educates me. Thank you so much, my man. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me, brother. You be well.
All right, you too. You heard it. Get it. Not me. Gary Chambers Jr. Just broke it down for you. Can't get much simpler, much plainer than that. I don't believe this is the epitaph for Jasmine Crockett. I think she has a very bright future. She's only 44 years old. She can run again down the line. She could be formidable as a representative out of the great state of Texas, still representing her 766,000 constituents. She's a public figure. She can appear on The View. She could do a lot of different things. And I think that she will. But the lesson that I peeled from all of this is that she didn't build the right team to pinpoint who and where she needed to target in order to win this election. That is what happened. Not my words, the words of Gary Chambers, who I appreciated coming on the show and reminding us she could have targeted the black community more fiercely. And had she had more black folks voting for her, it would have been enough to win the United States Senate seat. Gary Chambers knows what he's talking about now. The man ain't clueless. He wanted us to listen so we would hear. I heard him. Did y'all? That's it for this edition of Straight Shooter. See y'all on Wednesday night, SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't miss it. You know I won't. Peace and love, everybody.